This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, welcome to this week's Must Hear Music podcast. We're returning after a little bit of a hiatus, as long time or short, even some short time listeners might know. We recently and sadly saw Jason and Erica move on to allegedly greener pastures. No, both of them left Billboard to move on to different things in their careers, and so we sadly had to say goodbye to them on the podcast. So things have been very busy at Billboard, so we've been taking a couple weeks off of this podcast, but we're coming back with a very good one this week. So we're going to discuss a few songs, and after that, I'm going to toss to an interview. Recently, one of my favorite singer-songwriters, Tori Amos, stopped by.
She's the new panelist on the podcast.
She's replacing Jason. A pretty big step up, ultimately.
A huge upgrade for Billboard.
Did Jason make the album Little Earthquakes? I don't think so. So, screw Jason. Anyways.
Exactly.
So, once we chat about some songs, I'm going to toss to an interview with her. She has an album/play called The Light Princess. It debuted in Britain a couple years ago, and now the album, cast album, is out. Debuted number 2 on the Billboard Broadway charts, and she is in America kind of talking with Broadway producers and as well as Hollywood to bring it both to the stage and the screen. So we talk about like how that process is going, how her teenage daughter kind of like kept her quote-unquote honest with this story about teenagers. It's really interesting, and it was really cool for me because I love her. So stick around for that, or even skip ahead if you don't give a shit about any of this. But we do have some good stuff to talk about. We're going to start with the big one, which is Adele's Hello, which dropped just a few days ago, has already set seemingly a million records. Like, it's the most... I should have written this down.
Most streams on Vivo in a 24-hour period. It defeated Bad Blood.
Boom.
Also, most streamed on YouTube for the year, and it's on track to be the fastest-selling song this year in the UK. Just a couple more facts for you.
I mean, who cares about the UK, though? I want to stick to American facts, Aaron. Oh, we should. Anyways, thank you for joining
me.
This
is an American podcast.
This is an American podcast, Aaron. So we have Aaron Strecker, who I just insulted.
Repping the world.
And Chris Payne.
I'm all about the American artists on the podcast.
Totally, yeah. Adele, honorary American, though.
Yeah, and one of the two people I suggested was Canadian. That might have been a mistake, but...
My other person was... I'm just repping the Brits today, and I'm totally okay with that.
Disgusting. Well, Tori Amos at least is American.
At
but
least.
Married to a Brit, so again, you know...
So really, maybe you shouldn't have said any of this.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't be insulting the British. Anyway, so... Sorry, I'm just... Never mind. It's not worth explaining. It would take too long. But
anyway, Adele's a Brit, and she also makes incredible
Adele,
music.
Okay, so the other record, a couple other really interesting records. Adele's Hello has become the second. It just recently reached 100 million views on YouTube. Second fastest video, or the second fastest amount of time to do that, just behind Psy's Gentleman. That actually reached 100 million faster, but that's the only video that ever did. And it will... This is a record I'm just very happy got broken. So it's sold more. It's going to have sold more digital downloads in 1 week than any other song in history, breaking the record, which kind of depressingly before that was held by Flo Rida for Right Round.
That's a good. I like Right Round. I don't think I that's depressing
like
at all.
That's a fun chart fact. Like, really, huh? That one went all the way.
Like that. That was the biggest. That had the biggest selling download week.
Kesha's
like
on that song.
Kesha's on that song.
Pre-fame Kesha.
I love Kesha. The song's good, but it's just it's a ripoff of an '80s song that's a lot better. I just feel like I'm glad. It just, I don't know. It's just kind of a lame thing. Like, that was our favorite song. Come on, guys. You know, we can do better.
We can do better.
And we did do better.
With Adele, with a beautiful ballad.
But yeah, so let's all cry. So let's talk about it. So, Aaron, what do you think about Hello?
I really, really loved it. Obviously, I started crying like 30 seconds in. It sounds most similar. I think everyone was very curious if Adele would maybe go in a different direction this album. But I think fans were really pleased to see that, you know, while she's made clear that 25 is not going to be a breakup album like 21 is, there's still, like, judging by the lead single, it's going to be about relationships and, you know, lost love and all the feelings that go along with that. And I was really excited to see that.
Chris, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I mean, like Aaron said, that song does not reinvent Adele in any way, but I think that's fine. I really can't think off the top of my head an Adele reinvention that I would have been like yearning for with this
right.
song. It's like
you didn't want like a club jam.
No, I didn't. It's like, man, I know Adele brings out a lot of like grumpy traditionalists. It's like she's all about the music. She's not being sexy. So there's a lot of crap like that being said, but with radio and just how everything on Top 40 is so beat-driven nowadays, it's really refreshing that a song like this will be killing the game and, like, just giving people a different flavor.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit because we don't know yet exactly what kind of impact it'll have on Top 40, but I think we can, at this point, safely assume it'll do well.
Well, we know it's going to debut at number one, and yeah. I would say it'll probably be, like, in the radio, like... If not number one at radio for the next couple of months, like, it'll be in the top five. Like, I think we'll be hearing a lot of this.
Because she's going to have, like Adult Contemporary Unlock along
sure.
with Top 40. So, like, multiple formats, mm-hmm. you know. That's why, like, something like the Imagine Dragons song,
Radioactive.
That's why it broke the record for most weeks in the Hot 100, because it was on so many formats.
That's some good. We've got some good chart facts here.
I feel like everyone's going to really learn a lot.
I'm just going to rip off a mask, and I'm Silvio inside the...
Sylvia's the head of our charts department
yeah.
for anyone listening who isn't intimately familiar with who works at Billboard. I really love this song. I think the first time I heard it, I was a little surprised how not different it was. You know, like this could have been on 21, but I'm not let down because it's just so solid and it's very memorable. Like I find it in my head a lot, which is an impressive thing to say for something this slow. Like, usually a kind of depressing ballad doesn't, like, get stuck in your head, even if you like it. But this has been in my head for, like, the last week. People have been, like, mostly response is positive. I feel like people have been a little down on the lyrics. I totally disagree. Like, I think this it's a song about someone, you know, like, how you break up with someone and you always feel like calling them. And then there's that element of, she's admitting that she was kind of the one who was the jerk in the relationship. Like, I'm not maybe saying the lyrics are perfect, but it's a perspective that you don't hear a lot, I would say, in songs. Like, there aren't a lot of breakup songs where it's like, actually, I was the one who was the asshole. Like, I think that's smart and honest, yeah. And you generally don't hear that. So I'm all about Hello.
Yay, Hello.
And
also, Hello conveniently gave us wonderful memes with Lionel Richie and with others. So thank you for that as well, Adele.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many good Hello songs. There's the Beyonce one. There's I Just Called to Say Hello. There's probably some other ones I can't think of off the top.
I actually looked this up. I can't think of any other ones off the top of my head besides what you mentioned. But there's like 15 to 20 songs that are Hello.
Just so. Called Hello.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello, or like hello in one other word, so.
The first track on Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory, is called Hello. That's probably not the best of the songs, but it's the first one that came to my head.
Another
Fertile Ground is all
more Brit invasion stuff.
More Brits.
All right. Well, let's listen to it because you guys probably haven't heard this one, you listeners out there. So let's listen to a little bit of Adele's Hello.
Running out of time. So hello from the other side. I must have called 1,000 times to tell you I'm sorry.
All right. That was the new Adele. By the way, if you're listening and you feel differently, I'd be very curious if there's people out there who are not digging it or are not excited about it, because I mostly just heard from people who love it. So I'd be curious if there are conflicting thoughts. Tweet it at us or me. Aaron's looking at me like, don't have them tweet at me.
You completely misinterpreted my facial expression. I would love to hear from people who don't like it so I can tell you how wrong you are.
All right. Well, there you go. Let's switch to Grimes. So this is a Chris pick. We've got, this is certainly, I don't want to say like the opposite, but this is another artist who's coming back after a long break, and unlike Adele, is sounding very different. So her new song is called Flesh Without Blood, and it's from her upcoming album, Art Angels. And why don't you take it away, C-Pain?
Yeah, this is my Canadian pick for the show. Grimes, repping Montreal, the Montreal scene up there. Yeah, it's like there have been really so much hype around this new Grimes album in just all sorts of like indie and alternative pop circles. And her last album came out in 2012. And since then, she had written a song for Rihanna that was kind of like a club banger, a weird club banger, but still a club banger that Rihanna rejected. And Grimes recorded herself that was really poppy. Then she had done some interviews where she said she was backpedaling more from her singles. So I was really wondering what this song would sound like. I've liked Grimes a lot in the past, but I did have some reservations about like what this album would be. But for now, like I'm sipping the Kool-Aid on it. This song is really catchy. It's a pop song, but I think it's good for Grimes because she's not doing anything that's just like following somebody else. I can't just listen to this song and be like, oh, it sounds like this. She jacked this. It's really catchy, well done, and it still has that weirdness.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't super familiar with her, but I really liked this song. I liked the electronic influences, and it also, to me, sort of sounded like a Haim song if only one person was singing it. I don't know if that's, like, completely out of left field, but when I was listening to it, I was like, if this was just a little bit different, I would feel like this should be on a Haim album.
Because of, like, the way, like, all those vocals?
Yeah, the way that this kind of, the way it was kind of produced, not necessarily, like, the instruments, but the way it just kind of sounded. I was like, this should be on, like, Forever or something, or The Wire, or whatever it was called.
I mean, if like at the very base of the song, there is like a very simple driving guitar. So maybe like it could come from that.
I like how like you completely disagree with me, but you're slowly like, well, maybe if you did this and this, and I could sort of get on board with your opinion.
No, I did.
I'm saying that's why it would be similar to Haim. Because like,
oh, okay, like, if there was that.
Yeah, because okay. like the Haim songs are guitar based, but they're not like guitars that are like smacking you in the face. It's just like at the bottom.
Right, okay. It's just like one level of it. All right, now I got what you're saying.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to talk about that guitar riff because it's fine. Like, I like it, but the guitar riff is, like, fairly... I'm really surprised, like, how mainstream this sounds to me. Like, the guitar riff is pretty straightforward. I think the Haim comparison works because, like, and I love Haim, but, like, they're very, like, traditional pop rock sound. Mm. And I'm just, like... I'm not saying I like it. It's very catchy, but I am, for someone who really dug Grimes' visions, I'm a little, like, this is just, like, so kind of regular and middle of the road. You're right. Okay, sorry, now I'm backpedaling. You're right that this is a weirder pop song than most pop on the radio, but, like, yeah. Compared to what Grimes was doing before, like, it's pretty straightforward. And I'm just like, I don't know, like, I wanted more of Grimes, like weird, ghostly.
You wanted her to get weirder.
I don't know if I wanted her to get weirder, but, like, I think there's a way to, like, polish your sound without kind of, like, going totally mainstream. And this feels very, like, M.O.R. to me. I mean, I guess I also feel like I kind of don't even like criticizing it, because if I didn't know previous Grimes stuff, I would be like, wow, this is awesome. Mm. I love this new artist. But just because I liked Vision so much and how, like, kind of lo-fi it was, I'm a little, like, taken aback. I'm in shell shock right now. I'm having a hard time acclimating. I feel like maybe I just need a month or something, and then I'll be totally on board with, like, top 40 Eamon Grimes. But there's, like, no, like, she definitely,
it's not,
like,
I mean, it's not gonna get played on radio. I mean, I would be awesome if it did, but I don't think it will.
I think it might, like, get some. I'm not gonna say top 10 certainly, but
I'm with Chris. I'd be very surprised if I heard this on mainstream radio.
All right. Well, maybe I'm totally off. Maybe alternative radio. Maybe this is going to be.
Maybe. Yeah. It could happen.
Anyways.
And she did say it is not, like, especially representative of the whole album. She did say that specifically. Mm. So maybe you still will like a lot of it.
So calm down, Joe.
Can we stop the podcast? I need to go hyperventilate. No, I like it. It's so, I don't actually know if we said this, so it's called Flesh Without Blood. That might have been my bad, dropping the name. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, let's listen to it, because I'm, like, so torn on it. I like it, but I'm definitely, and I hate to be the person who's like, just make more music like your last album, but that is what my immediate reaction to this is. So let's listen to it. It's Grimes, Flesh Without Blood. I don't care. That's a new Grimes, Flesh Without Blood. Let's talk about some more Brits. More three Brits and an Irishman. One Direction. New song is called Perfect. And it's one of, like, four we've heard from three. Wait, no. Aaron's correcting me. But how many? Okay, so we have Infinity. Oh, Home isn't on the album, though. That's true.
It's not a single. I thought it was. I forgot about Infinity, which doesn't bode well. I thought it was Drag Me Down is the first single.
Drag Me Down.
Then they released Infinity as a track, I
Infinity.
Thought. Then there's Home.
Home and this song,
and then
Perfect.
Perfect, which is the next, like, official single.
Yeah. So four,
okay,
new
four.
One Direction
right.
songs. So I'm right.
Yes, I was Cha-ching. Wrong and you're right.
All right. Can we get that on loop? Let's save that little audio. Anyway.
First time for everything.
Yeah, we might need that in the future, probably. So new One Direction song, Perfect. This is from Made in the AM, which is an album that is getting a lot of attention just because it's One Direction's last album before their hiatus. A lot of people think it'll be their last album ever.
It's also the first album without Zayn.
True. First Zayn-less album. And it's going up against Justin Bieber's Purpose, record release day, November 6th. And
13th.
Whew.
Oh, yeah, 13th, right. Yeah, good fact check. And, I mean, Bieber is, like, a monster at this point. Like, it really seems like he's going to, I think, going to, like, beat them in album sales, because it seems like they're on a little bit of a dip. I'm not saying they're, like, plummeting, but
Bieber's on a little bit of an upswing.
He's on a big upswing.
Sorry.
Yes. He's, like, looking like he's going to have three. Well, I guess, yeah, Where Are You Now is on his album. So
he'll
have
three
top 10
three
hits,
huge hits
before
this
album even comes out. Whereas
with 1D, like, we're going to talk about Perfect. And, like, for me, it's, like, not 1D at their best. I really liked Drag Me Down, so, like, I think they can definitely work as a foursome. I thought it was really exciting. But the other Infinity and Home aren't super doing it for me. And then Perfect, which, again, is the second, like, official single off Made in the AM. It's definitely good. Like, if you like One Direction, like, this is another fun song to, like, bop your head to while you're, like, working or whatever. But, like, there's nothing really to it, and it's super forgettable. And, like, I think we talked at one point about Drag Me Down, where, like, it's bad news on, like, a boy band pop song if the chorus isn't stuck in your head. Like, I feel like that's mm-hmm. the baseline that they kind of have to hit. And with Perfect, I really like watching them run around and be goofy in the video. Like, that's fun and enjoyable, but I don't necessarily want to be, like, listening to the song on a loop. So I'm curious. I like Drag Me Down more, so I'm curious on the album what direction it's going to go for their final installment of songs.
Which direction it's going to go.
Nope, bye.
I kind of disagree, because we talked about Drag Me. I'm not a Drag Me Down fan, because it reminds me so much of Maroon 5, who I really don't like. but Perfect, like, I enjoy more, and I actually kind of liked Home, but I 100% agree that you're right. Like, when it's over, it's kind of hard to remember the chorus. Like, you wouldn't, even after listening to it two times, you still have to be like, wait, how did that exactly go? But while listening to it, I find it very pleasant. I kind of like that the lyrics are, like, they're growing up a bit, because, like, the lyrics are basically about just, like, them being One Direction and having, like, a one-night stand with someone.
But wait, can we really talk quick? Because one of my favorite things about One Direction in general is, even from way back when, their whole thing is that they're, like, much, like, dirtier and adult than you would first expect, and all of their album titles are insane, and they each like, up the ante, and now it's Made in the AM, and it sounds like Morning After, so I...
100%,
so I just, I think that's always just, like, super fascinating to me, since I feel like... Like, I like One Direction, but, like, the average One Direction fan don't come for me. But they're, like, 16-year-olds. I don't know.
What was the first ones? Like, Up All Night?
Up All Night, Midnight Memories.
Take Me Home.
Four, which was the outlier, and now Made in the AM.
Right. No, they're all very, like, one-night standy titles.
They want to have a one-night stand. Why don't you guys understand this?
Won't somebody please give One Direction some play? Like, they've just
what do they have to do?
They just need to get some action, guys. And apparently no one's giving it to them because they keep having to title their albums these things.
Also,
I feel so bad for them.
I feel so bad for One Direction. No. But also, fun fact, this song was co-written by a team, including Harry Styles and Louis Tomlinson. And so fans are very excited about that for a lot of reasons.
How much do you think they really had to do with writing this song?
You know what?
I'm Joe, devil's advocate.
We'll
this
never
hard.
Know because it was, as I said, it was a team, but
there's no I in team.
I'm just pointing out that, like, the day it was released, the song is about, like, you know, hotel rendezvous, and people were throwing up tons of, like, pictures and gifts of Harry and Louis, like, in hotel rooms together, like, waving at fans. I'm just throwing that out there for those fans of the podcast who might be interested in that information.
No, that's wonderful information. I'm, like I said, I'm just going to devil's advocate.
No, I mean, fair. I think any time, like, eight people are songwriters for a track, and I made up eight, but it's more than five.
Right. You kind of got to wonder at that point. Although I do, like, so wait, it's, who are the ones, not Harry, but it's Liam and Louis who have been doing a lot of songwriting?
Yeah, so Louis, like, maybe vocally, some people would say, not me, but some people would say he's not the strongest member of the band, but behind the scenes, his name shows up in the songwriting credits the most.
Yeah, I kind of buy that. Like, I can imagine,
sure,
like, him, for some reason, just the idea of, like, Harry Styles writing songs, I feel like he's the one who, like, shows up late to the session and, like, tosses in a couple lyrics, and they're like, great job, Harry, thanks. And they're like, all right, let's actually write this song now.
What if we wrote a song about a one-night stand? That's, like, Harry's contribution.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in a hotel room, and, well, I can't really think of what would happen next.
I'm out.
Yeah. This is really awkward, though, because I know Harry Styles listens to this podcast, so...
Well, again, we're not saying he didn't. We don't know.
We don't know. Yeah, Harry,
it's open. It's open to interp.
Did you just... abbreviate interpretation? Oh, my God. That's bad. I don't even know if I would do that. I probably would.
Oh, that's embarrassing for me. That I should. If you wouldn't do it, I need to fact check myself.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chris, what do you think about it?
Erin, what did I... ask, we sit next to each other. What did I ask you right after I listened to it?
You said this is the one that everyone is saying, like, is a ripoff of Taylor Swift's Style, right? And
it
yes.
sounds, you can pretty much sing the chorus of Style over the One Direction song. They're so similar.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's like I've heard this. It's like, it's like, it's a pretty, I would honestly say I think the chorus is a little bit better than we were letting on earlier. The problem is that it's just so sound alike. It's like I've heard this 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I don't need this exact thing again.
Slam. All right. Well, let's give it a listen. So it's One Direction, Perfect, and here it is. If you like to do the things you know that we shouldn't do, then baby, I'm perfect. Baby, I'm perfect for you. And if you like, then I'm driving. All right, that was One Direction's Perfect. And now let's listen to, we're going to toss to the Tori Amos interview. But as we do that, we're going to listen to a song from her musical called Darkest Hour. So this is her solo version of it, but it appears in cast version on her cast album, The Light Princess. Before we do that, I want to say thanks to Erin and Chris for stopping by.
Holler.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys later. Bye. Okay. Hey, this is Joe. We're here on the Must Hear Music podcast, and we have a very special guest with us right now. We have Tori Amos, who's one of my favorite singer-songwriters, and she has a very kind of interesting project going on. She has a play, a musical, that has already been in Britain, and now the original cast recording is out, and she's kind of looking to bring it to Broadway. And so we're here to talk about that. And I feel like since a lot of people listening are primarily Americans, probably were not in Britain to see this play, I was hoping you could kind of give like a little intro into this. So I know it's based on a Scottish fairy tale about a princess who basically defies gravity. Because as far as I understand it, her mother dies and she kind of like is floating in a sense to kind of like get closer to her, to like get to heaven. And then it's like kind of a star-crossed romance situation with another kingdom, or what's the...
That's great, Joe. Hi, by the way. Thanks for having me. You've done your homework. Yes, it was based on the George MacDonald fairy tale, The Light Princess. We utilized that as a jumping-off point to have a story that would resonate with 21st century teenagers. We chose to make sure that our princess was floating because of real issues, not because of curses, because curses mm-hmm. don't happen to 15-year-olds, and they're just going to look at you like you've lost your mind,
right.
Like some crazy grown-up. I mean, my daughter would look at me and say, don't betray us, Mom. We do have real issues. Tackle them. So that's been the goal of The Light Princess. Yes, it's a fairy tale, but we're dealing with teenage issues and emotional issues that exist now, today.
That's interesting you said that about your daughter. So was she involved in kind of like coaching you in a sense of like, you know, making sure this is relevant to like modern teenagers?
She's been, I guess you could say in some ways, she's been this shadow creature with the project, stalking it from afar.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, she loves Vikings, she loves Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead. So The Light Princess isn't as violent
right.
as those. So parents listening or teenagers listening, I'm not going to promote something it isn't, but it does tackle abuse of power mm-hmm. from the fathers who are kings. It is more Montagues and Capulets than it is, say, a G-rated fairy tale that commercial film companies sometimes make out of fairy
right.
tales. And yes, there are two kingdoms, Lagobel, where she is from, and Sealand, where he is from. So she has too much levity. After her mother dies, she tries to follow her mother to heaven. The grief is so overwhelming mm-hmm. to the kingdom. Imagine Princess Diana dying and what that
right.
did to England and the grieving of a whole country that happened.
Yes.
Well, that's what happens in Lagobel. So they've lost their beloved queen who loved everybody and who this little girl at 4 years old, she adored her mother.
Mm-hmm.
So when her mother dies, the grief from the kingdom is so much that she thinks that their tears are going to drown her. So she lifts her feet and tries to follow her mother to heaven by floating.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in Sealand, when he loses his mother, he cries and is so affected that he becomes the solemn prince of Sealand and has so much gravity. So he has so much gravity, she has so much levity, and that's the poetry of the piece.
Yeah, that's kind of beautiful. And I know you worked on the story with Samuel Adamson, who people might know, he was the one who did I think it was Broadway All About My Mother adaptation.
Yes.
Yes.
He's done All About My Mother. He's been involved in Breakfast at Tiffany's mm-hmm. in England. He was on the War Horse team. And he has the new Michael Mapurgo, who wrote the original children's book of War Horse, Running Wild, I think is the title of
oh.
it. And that will be out next year in England.
So how did you originally, I guess, link up with him? Like, who reached out to who? Was it your idea to get him on board, or?
I read The Light Princess, and I thought this could make a great musical if we make sure that we're dealing with contemporary issues. And the door to the British National Theatre opened through people that we knew. Therefore, we went, and they're state-funded, so they're not a commercial house. The thing about the National is, in some ways, it really is against commercial story. Mm-hmm. So it's the other way. It's the opposite of Broadway, or you could say Hollywood. It's not, it's more independent film, if you think of it like that. And it has great respect from people all over the world. And working there was really incredible because they allowed us to tell a story we wanted to tell without dumbing it down.
Yeah, I was actually, that was one of the things that struck me about this, because when you hear, you know, someone, an artist is going into musical theater, it's usually like Green Day will adapt their album, or they'll do a Carole King musical with all of her hits. But this is original music composed for this, which is kind of risky, something that, like, you know, usually Broadway isn't as interested in. Was there any point where someone was like, oh, you should play it safe and, like, do a musical based on your existing material that people already know?
Well, not the National Theater. That was the great thing about developing it there. So I'd say to you, it sounds like Hamilton was developed through funded theater.
Mm-hmm.
So you're able, when you're in that environment, you don't have the big money producers necessarily saying, as Julie Taymor was warning me a few years ago, saying to me in Spain, we were at a New York Times event speaking on the same day, and she and I spoke, and she just said, listen, if you're going to enter the commercial world, you have to be very clear what kind of story you want to tell. And then more importantly, you better have the producers who will honor that story and not betray the audience that believes in that story. So that's the process we're in now, finding those people, those brave Broadway producers who understand what it is. No different than what Fun Home is. It tackles some really tough subjects.
And do you think, kind of now that you're in the stage, I know it's very early, like looking to bring it to Broadway, I mean, are you open to making changes to it in terms of like music or storytelling, or is this specifically you want to keep it kind of as is?
I think, Joe, always, whether you're talking making a film of The Light Princess, which is possibly also on the table with some good folks from the West Coast. And we're talking to Andrew Lazar. We've met with him. We have a great relationship with his team. And he wants to make sure we do deal with these issues, and he doesn't want to dumb it down. So we've made the right partnership there. However, when you're going to a different medium, whether it's state theater to Broadway, you have to, and they're the warning signals saying, Tori, you have to know when you're when you're changing mediums, whether it's from the stage to film or whether it's from Britain to America, you have to be open to making adjustments. Of course, change is part of it, it's part of creating, and that doesn't frighten me.
Right.
Change can be for good, but once you start betraying a piece, that's a different story. That's a different conversation.
Right. And you mentioned that, you know, kind of a film, which is something I was going to ask about, is it's at least an idea that's being seeded. I know it's way too early, but are there kind of like actors you could imagine doing this play?
That's way too early. I think you start thinking about potential directors.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam's writing the screenplay. And it's what's exciting is watching it develop for film. The album, this original cast album, has done what I had hoped it would do, in that it's now in the hands of the public.
Right.
And it's also now in hands of producers, directors, creators, and they can sit in their car, they can listen to it, they can put their headphones on, because the whole idea was to not make a traditional cast album, but to make an album that would work in the music business. Right. So our benchmark was high. And we worked 11 months on it, no different than on a Tory record.
Yeah, it's a long time for a cast recording.
Yeah, it is. And you realize the budgets in the music business, they're not what they used to be. So I kind of, not threatened husband, but I just said, look, you have a studio, you're a Pro Tool expert, you play drums, bass, guitar, and we're going to get a divorce if you don't help me do this. So for 11 months we did this. And Tash kind of said, okay, mom, okay, dad, you got to do this. Deliver.
Mm-hmm. That's really funny. And I wanted to back up and talk about the music a bit. So, because listening to it, so the way that the cast album is set up is you have the story itself, which sounds, you know, like musical theater. It sounds written for that. And then at the very end, there is you singing two songs, and they sound very, like, if you had heard them just cold in the middle of nowhere, like, you would just be like, oh, this is just a new Tori Amos song. Like, it doesn't sound written for theater, per se. So I'm curious, like, kind of what was your process of writing material for the play and adapting it one way versus the other? You know, is there a point where you're like, if I was making this for a studio album, I would do this, but now that it's theater, I'm going this route?
Yes. All the things you just said. It's everything was written that you hear on the album originally on the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So even the dragon sequences that you hear in Queen material, that has no, there's no vocalizing. There might be dialogue with it. So it sounds like underscoring. Everything, every bar was written on the piano. And then once we, Sam and I, thought this is telling the story correctly, then the music supervisor, Martin Lowe, who has been involved with musicals since he was born, we would pull him in as part of the process. And then we had John Philip Chanel as one of the orchestrators. And then Martin and I were doing some of the orchestrations as well.
Okay. And I guess how long did that process take?
Well, the thing about this is that we had a few workshops, which was great, and that's how we developed the story. We used George MacDonald's story, like I had said to you, as a jumping off point. There's a reason that nobody has done it in over 130 some years. Mm-hmm. It's a great fairy tale for the 19th century, and I know some people love it. But when I would read it to my daughter, I didn't get the eyes looking back at me, mm-hmm. because the princess was not fully developed in the story. It's not a young woman that I think young women want to be.
Right.
So she is in some way a caricature of girls in the 19th century that will never have a college degree.
Right.
Or become a powerful woman. And we knew that we had to deal with a teenager who, when she was a child, was damaged, mm-hmm. because the grown-ups didn't deal with tragedy like they could have. And as parents, we're not perfect parents. Her father is not evil. Inherently, he's good, but he makes some really bad decisions. And he makes some bad, poor parenting decisions, as we all can. And he thinks, though, he knows what's best for her and what she needs to do to be successful in life. How many times have we heard parents say that?
You know, every parent.
You don't want to go into the music business. Things like mm-hmm. that. So they don't mean to destroy your life. But as a parent myself, I know that I'll say to Tash, no way are you going in the music business.
Mm-hmm.
No way. And then, you know, you think you're doing the right thing, and your kid looks at you and says, you're making these decisions based on what you want me to do, not what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. But sorry, now I'm going off a tangent, but you were mentioning before we started recording, your daughter isn't interested in the music industry, per se.
She's interested in all kinds of things, Joe. I have no idea what she's up to. She's involved in, she writes her songs, she writes her stories. She loves English literature. She likes drama. but she's got a guitar in her hands. Anytime I turn around, the door is closed, and as soon as I walk in the door, then the guitar gets put down really quick. So I don't know what Tash's up to.
That's awesome. So she's writing stuff, potentially, that she just doesn't maybe want you to...
Well, she's got her own Pro Tools rig, so she has her own access to do what she wants to do. But I don't really know what Tash's up to, because she's 15, and she tells me what she wants to tell me. But we have a really good relationship. I just have to respect that she is figuring things out as well. And she'll tell me when she's ready to tell me, or show me, play me songs when she's ready to show me.
Right.
Or, I don't know, talk about going into politics if she wants to do that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great, it seems like you have a really great sense of boundaries. I mean, I'm not a parent. I'm certainly closer in age to being a teenager at this point, I feel, than I am to having my own teenage kid. But it's very important to kind of, like, you can foster creativity, but you can also stifle it by being too involved with your kid's life.
Yeah, I would, if I'm honest with you, I don't know if my boundaries are very good. I think Tash's boundaries are good.
Well, then you raised her right. One other thing I wanted to ask, so I guess just kind of, like, getting down to hard dates, like, is it too early to say, or is there any point where you're, like, thinking, okay, maybe we could start working on this for Broadway in 2016, or have a finished screenplay by 2016, or, like, where kind of is that process?
Well, I think it's dangerous to put timelines, because sometimes things speed up, mm-hmm. and we have two paths up the mountain, which is the film path and the stage path, both of them with commercial producers. So the first commercial venture was the album. That's our very first step into this world. And now it's about finding the right people in both those worlds. The film team, we know who the producers are. And the Broadway team, we're having those conversations as we speak. So it's an exciting time. Mm-hmm. But what's making the difference is the response from the public. So to be number two on the Billboard chart, the Broadway chart, without having a show running anywhere in the world, is a response from Team Light Princess, who are the people in the States that have embraced the album.
Right. There's a lot of interest in it. And I think from what I like the songs, like, you know, the ones that are proper songs, I think are things that are really memorable. So I feel like this kind of could become something that people latch on to and return to. But you know, it's also, like you mentioned, it's very strange. This is something that's been a play in Britain, and now it's being embraced solely on its musical value, basically. You know, the people in America listening to it haven't seen it, you know.
No, that's exciting. They're listening in their car and their headphones, and the idea was to create sonic theater so that the story would come alive without you seeing anything visually. And that means when we do get on stage or on film, people are coming knowing the music.
Right. Well, before I let you go, I wanted to ask a few, you know, just like, I guess, what are you into right now? Are there current Broadway plays or musicals that you're enjoying, or current artists, you know, releasing albums in the last few months that you've been digging?
Well, right now I'm focusing on musical theater because that's just what I need to focus on. Mm-hmm. And having seen Fun Home while we were here, we're seeing Kinky Boots, mm-hmm. Hamilton,
nice.
On Your Feet. So a cross-section of musicals just in the few days that I've been here. And it's all really exciting. And they're all very different. Mm-hmm. You can't compare them with each other. One being, of course, the Gloria Estefan story, which is what you were talking about before, music from her illustrious career, mm-hmm. and her story as a Cuban-American coming, which is quite topical because of what is happening in politics, about immigration, etc. And so then watching Fun Home, of course, with that subject matter, which is 85% sung, that's very close to The Light Princess in form and structure. Mm-hmm. So we're 85% sung as well. And that, when you're talking about that, that's more Sondheim. So The Light Princess is more influenced by that type of structure, mm-hmm. a lot of singing. And story told through song, opposed to heavy book and then songs here and there.
Right. That's cool. Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm, you know, living in New York, I'm excited if this makes it to Broadway, but I do hope that it also makes it to the big screen. So, you know, those who don't make it to New York can also see and experience it.
Yeah. But, well, thank you, Joe. And thank you, everybody out there who's been supportive and keeps being supportive, because honestly, it makes a difference. It's what the producers are looking for. So thank you for being part of a team like Princess.
Thank you so much for coming by. And that was Tori Amos. Thanks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.